Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Hey, Energy Matters listeners, welcome back to another episode, and get on the woo-woo train because we got a special one for you. We're going to be talking about angels, aliens, metaphysics, spirituality, mediumship with our good friend Trisha Carr, my very good friend Trisha Carr, and I am here with my very good friend Cody Edner.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, I like that, the woo-woo train. Does the horn go woo-woo?
And before we jump into the episode, you can catch all of our stuff at energymattersacademy.com. Come the new year of 2020, Cody and I will be teaching a new intuitive training course. So get on our newsletter and stay tuned for that.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years since we started one. So, and then if you want to come with me to the Himalayan Kingdom of Bhutan, I'm taking a group October 30th to November 8th. If that hasn't passed yet, when you listen to this, and if it has, you know, come with me next time. So super excited to share this episode with you, with metaphysical teacher, channel medium, dolphin whisperer. She knows all things spiritual. Oh, and we cover Doreen Virtue, if you've ever used those tarot cards, and some interesting controversy around that.
A little bit. Yeah, it gets a little dicey there.
We get into a little spiritual gossip.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Do you know what she did with her chakras? Like that was, oh my God. How'd she do that? Oh, and as we jump in, if you enjoy the show, go on iTunes if you get a chance and rate it. All right.
Please do.
Here we go. Trisha Carr. Hey, Trisha Carr. Welcome to the podcast. How you doing? Good to have you.
Are we really doing it?
We're live.
Oh, okay. I can't tell the difference. I can't tell the difference. Between Gandelman.
You know I'm always full of it.
So. That's about as professional as you get sometimes. So
He's always live.
Yeah.
So on and on and on, and then he just is out.
You could do outtakes. You could do outtakes after this episode.
We're starting today's episode with an outtake. My whole life is an outtake.
We didn't take it out. Yep, just this incarnation. We're just going to take it out of the soul lineage.
That's right. So good to have you. Welcome, and flanked by Cody here.
I'm so excited. This is really, really fun.
So I've been on your show, Charmed Life, twice. Yes. Cody's been on your show, and I've been on your comedy podcast, Enlightened AF.
Yes.
What does AF stand for?
A stands for, aren't you a millennial? Shouldn't you know this?
I love that show.
This is for the Gen Xers and the
baby
boomers.
To answer it.
And the boomers. No, A stands for as, and F stands for the F word. Yeah.
I love that. When I got on the show, I was like, your show is called Enlightened AF. That's hilarious.
I'm glad you appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Give me the giggles.
So, that's the point. We want to come right out of the gate poking fun.
Exactly. On to more important topics. How did we meet again? So go ahead.
Okay.
you remember better than me.
We met. Okay. So I have a friend named Olivia Ray. I met her at a horse sanctuary we were both volunteering at, and was like, okay, hi, we're soulmates, we're best friends. And so she actually started to, I, asked her to do some assistant work for me. So now Olivia has been helping me doing some assistance, and then she helps me with my podcast, Charmed Life, and she helps me book guests sometimes. And she's like, you should, first of all, listen to this other podcast called Energy Matters. And so I did. And I was like, this is great. I want to steal all of their guests. That was the first thing I said. And then the second thing, Olivia was like, you know, David and Cody, I know them. I've worked with them. And she suggested that she reach out to David first and ask him to be on my show. And that's how we met. It was right, actually you sitting in the lobby of my studio so that we could do Charmed Life.
And so when I got to your studio, I didn't realize that it was the same Olivia that was a student of mine in Cody's and was also, I've known her for a long time. Yeah. And I was like, wait, what are you doing here? Are you on the show too?
Fancy seeing you here. Yeah.
So weird to see you here. So anyway, it was so good. You got a great show. Anyone listening, Charmed Life and her comedy podcast, Enlightened AF.
Yeah.
And so when I've been on your show, we've talked a lot about deep spiritual matters, which we shall do again here. This time you get to share your experiences. So let's just start there. You teach mediumship, you teach energy work, you do animal communication, which is not something we've talked about yet on the podcast.
Haven't really.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like every time I speak with Cody, that's though like what's happening. But anyway, so we'll touch on all those subjects. And before we started the show, I just lightly mentioned to Cody that you're actually originally from Texas and you're a Christian, originally a Christian girl. How's my accent? Trisha Charm. Trisha Carr from Texas.
No, that's my married name. So it was not Carr when I lived in Texas, but sure, go ahead.
Let me just make shit up here. That's what I do. I have a guest on and then I just make shit up about them.
Yeah. I like it.
So tell us, how do you go from being a church girl from Texas to teaching spirituality in Los Angeles?
Well, the thing is my background as a Christian in the Christian evangelical fundamentalist religion, it was actually not because my family was doing that. I was a spiritual seeker, and that was the only paradigm that I knew to seek spirituality. And so I actually took myself to church starting at about age 10, and I would walk, or I would, you know, have a friend whose parents went to church and I would hitch with them or something like that. But I didn't go to church with my family. My mother was actually raised very terrifying kind of dogmatic, fire and brimstone, and very actually abusive sort of religious background. So she was very shut down and like really frightened to even think about the topic of church. So really, church wasn't a part of my household. If anything, you could say I was rebelling by taking myself to church. That's the kind of rebel I am. But I actually had my first, I can now see metaphysical opening while at church. When I was 11, I opted in this very traditional Baptist church, First Baptist in Saginaw, Texas. It was not an evangelical kind of charismatic with the spirit, you know, the gifts of the spirit kind of church, which I did go to those subsequently shortly after in seeking apparently of the psychic opening, which I hadn't had yet. But in this very traditional Baptist church, I elected to become baptized. And it wasn't something that they were even like kind of indoctrinating you for. It was just something I knew was available. And it sounded like it was something I wanted to do, to have this really strong, I mean, now in this language, I would say set this strong intention and make a commitment to spirit or to, you know, my inner being. That's what I would say it is now. And of course, I did have a relationship with Jesus. So, you know, Christ consciousness. But when I went down into the water, which it was like, everyone else I'd seen baptized, you just go down and you come up and you're soaking wet and you leave. And that was it. But I actually had what I think is basically like a Kundalini activation, because very viscerally, I experienced, saw, heard, felt a column of light go through my entire body. And now I would say also my energy body, but it went through my physical body because that's what I knew the body to be. And it made its whole path while I was in the water and went out my feet. I know Kundalini tends to, this suppose is described as going from the root up to the top, but this went from the top to the, all the way through my feet, and then filled the water, and it was incredibly bright white. So I guess it was basically like crossing over for a moment. And when I came up out of the water, I was trembling and I was, you know, ecstatic, and I was bawling, I was crying. And the pastor just thought I got scared because I was an 11-year-old who went underwater, and that's not what happened. And I looked out into the congregation, and my mother actually came to church for that. She was very touched by it, and she was weeping because I was weeping. Mm-hmm. And everybody else was just kind of looking like, okay, maybe we shouldn't baptize 11-year-olds anymore because they get scared. And that was the beginning of church for me. And the end of it was around, started to leave the church around 18, 19, 20. I kind of backslid back into church a little bit because I kind of missed the connection. But while I was in the kind of technically in the traditional model of evangelical Christianity, my intuition was honed very sharply. It feels exact. I remember how it felt then. It feels like it does now. I had mediumistic experiences. I had spontaneous energy healing. I, was speaking light language or in tongues, as they call it in the church, channeling, you know, all of that stuff was happening for me. But then the dogma and just the way that the framework of it, I just couldn't hang with it anymore. And it was contrary to what I felt inside. And I tell you, it's really scary leaving a system like that, because you have a belief, even if it's not the most dominant one, but you have a belief that you're going to have an eternal death if you leave. And so I had to kind of like just really dig deep and not believe that and believe what I felt as love instead. And that's my story of Christianity.
Wow. And so when you say dogma, you mean like you're a sinner, you're going to go to hell if you don't behave a certain way. What was the dogma?
I mean, it's really nuanced. There's so much, but there definitely is some of the stuff that just didn't track for me was, okay, kind of the in-speak and all of the different little structures that are like, well, this is Christian and this isn't. And also being Christian is, and this brand, to put it, you know, succinctly, is the only way that you have access to God and to avoid eternal damnation or death. And to me, that didn't track, because I'm like, I know for certain there are cultures that have no access to this brand. And that's not what I understand God to be. You know what I mean? That's not what I understand love to be. So it made no sense. And they would say, well, God wrote his commandments on everyone's heart, because that's actually in the Old Testament. And I was like, okay, I get that. That I get. But that seems something that's more fundamental about love, rather than going to church on Sunday at 10:30 and praying in tongues for 30 minutes. And everything became very much, it actually became so ritualized that to me, it seemed like something akin to witchcraft, which I don't think is a bad thing. But they did. You know what I mean? So they would say mm-hmm. something like witchcraft was bad, but then they would sort of have these rituals and almost like spells that they called the sinner's prayer, that people was the only pathway to be able to enter the kingdom of heaven. And even if you don't have full understanding of it or feeling of it, they were kind of saying, but it doesn't matter. You said the words. And so that's enough. And I'm like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Isn't it about a real intention and a real feeling? Now, this is a specific set of people in situations, one particular church that gave me the patterning that I was experiencing that caused me to exit. So this is not me saying this is how church has to be for anyone. And I certainly don't blame anyone. It's just what I was noticing that was giving me my ticket to break my own pattern of putting my authority and my sovereignty about spiritual nature outside of myself. And so those are the things that showed up for me.
Hmm. It's interesting to me to hear you talk about the, and I've often kind of looked at this from a spiritual perspective, something like the speaking in tongues mm-hmm. or some of the different experiences that you have in a church like that is spiritual. You know, I would look at speaking in tongues and say, well, that's mediumship in yeah. action. I just have a different word for it.
Exactly. Or light language or channeling. Right,
or channeling, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, that different word, that different description of it can be taken fearful, say, from their side, like you say, a spell, mm-hmm. Even though I wouldn't call it witchcraft, but I certainly would call it channeling and mediumship and even an opening of the psychic part of oneself is actually what they're doing.
Yeah.
But then the language doesn't allow for that freedom to kind of look at it and talk about it in terms of maybe the mechanics of it, how it works in a spiritual setting, so that you can take control of that in yourself and grow in it. And
oh, totally agree.
So I don't know what your experience might be coming out of it, like transitioning into mediumship probably wasn't a big, it was just a change in the language and perspective, but not maybe the experience so much.
Yeah. But there was, the limits were taken off. And I love, like right. you said, Cody, that it didn't leave room to understand the mechanics of it, because if you were curious about that, then you were just told, well, sometimes you would be told something like, it's not for us to know. And, you know, it's just God. And God was, God was something outside of yourself. But there is also the practice of God in your heart and the kingdom of heaven inside you. So you do sort of, you can have the genuine growth, as I have had. Like I said, it was true growth at the time. But I was, to make it sustainable and to have ownership and sovereignty of it, the facility wasn't there. Yeah. And the other issue I had was also just simply the logic of the book of the Bible, which I consider to have a lot of sacred spiritual education in it still. However, this book is somehow infallible. And that was illogical to me, because I know for sure that there are many, many different versions of it right now. So which one right. is infallible? I also am like, wait, if I tear a page out and give it to someone who's never had it, it doesn't spontaneously regenerate. So how is it infallible? You know what I mean? Like, it's just illogical. And I know that it has been translated over and over, and that even in, you know, that there was an intentional, the First Council of Nicaea, to actually take some, edit it in a particular way and curate it so that it would be safer, quote unquote, for the masses, or so that they could control them. Anyway, all of those things that I was just like, I have this faith that I actually gained while in that system. It was just too much cognitive dissonance, I guess I would say.
Yeah. In that system, was the book taken as literal as well, not just infallible, but very much more literal than you might conceive of it from a spiritual or meditative perspective?
It depends on who's standing behind the pulpit. Most of the churches I went to, it was like whatever was convenient is one way you could look at it, or whatever just made the most sense. So pretty much all of the churches that I went to would take Revelation as symbolic, mm-hmm. and saying that these are symbols that we'll be able to recognize, like there were prophecies of things that were going to be unfolding about end times. And it's not literally a, you know, three-headed dragon, and right. actually, you know, or something like that. It's figurative to point us directly to what will be literally happening at the time. And if you know the word well, then that will make sense. But then other times, and then other things like, this is what's so funny, again, the cognitive dissonance I had about it. In Paul's writings, women and men were to sit on opposite sides of the church, and, you know, two different sides. And the women were not to be in the church with their head uncovered. And they're like, yeah, that was cultural. That's actually passed away. But then some other things did not pass away. You know what I mean? Like, that would be socially and politically uncomfortable now. Things that would deny someone who, their true being. And if you want, you know, something, maybe some things about homosexuality or whatever, you know, those things were not taken as a cultural implication. They were like, nope, that's what the word says. And so, yeah, that's some of the
picking and choosing there. Yeah.
A little. Yeah. This is literal because it upholds my current opinion.
Right.
And this is not so much. And you know, that's okay, I guess, as long as it's about yourself. But if you're leading others and saying you must think and feel this way, that's when it gets tricky. What I've loved about all of the metaphysical teachers that I've had, they are really saying, no, it's your journey. You know what I mean? Like, you do it. And you're asking a question. I often am like, you get turned back to, well, you have to go into meditation and ask that question. Right. I can't tell you that. Even if you're doing a psychic reading, you could say, this is just what I'm getting. Take what resonates. I'm only a filter, but it's your work. It's your journey. And I appreciate that so much.
Who was it again, Tricia? Doreen Virtue, who was like the ultimate tarot card, spiritual, metaphysical
angel
person. Yeah. Who then, didn't she go back to evangelical Christianity recently?
Yeah, well, Doreen's story is actually really interesting. So Doreen was actually raised Christian Science. That's not the same as Scientology. Some people get those two confused. Christian Science is kind of a blend of, it's actually a science of mind is similar to it, but that's also a different religion or belief system.
That was Ernest Holmes. Yeah. Mary Baker Eddy was Christian Science. Yeah.
Christian Science. It's very metaphysical, actually.
Yeah, pardon? And it came out of a time when there was a lot of spiritualist
yes.
activity going on. And there's Unity Church came out at a similar time. They were yeah. a derivative of that. And,
yeah,
but anyway, so, yeah.
Yeah, Christian Science is kind of a blend of metaphysical ideology and philosophies and Christianity. And so Dorian Virtue came up in this church. And for example, some of the extreme Christian Science with the squeaky wheel about Christian Science people tend to know is certain people that went a bit zealous and they allowed their child to die because they didn't take her to the doctor or something. Mm-hmm. That's not at all the general philosophy in that particular denomination, but they do believe in energy healing. You know what I mean? And they believe giving the, you know, not allopathic, other kinds of modalities and energy healing a shot. And they believe that the non-physical or the mental and emotional is creating the physical experience, which that's pretty well accepted now by most people. Doctors tell us that the main thing that's making us sick is our stress. But, you know, 30, 40 years ago, even that was not understood at all. And so that it was a pretty advanced kind of denomination for Christianity. And so were the, you know, like the science of mind or religious science and all of these others. And spiritualism was really making its headway. So anyway, Dorian was raised that way and always had a kind of hybrid experience. And then she really moved into metaphysical thought and is a fantastic businesswoman. That's one thing you got to say. Prolific author of books and oracle cards. And she actually had a conversion in 2016 because the way she talks about it, she started to make this oracle deck called The Loving Words of Jesus. Now, the thing is, before she did this, I always heard her reply to herself as a Christian, hearkening back to the Christian Science beliefs, as well as, you know, all of the other spiritual perspectives, you know, metaphysical perspectives she had. Anyway, when she was doing this Loving Words of Jesus oracle deck, she said, I had never read the Bible before, but I read it in order to do this Christian, you know, this Loving Words of Jesus deck, which to me was really interesting because I was like, you've never read the Bible before, but then you align yourself with Christianity. I'm like, that's the one thing they tell you you're supposed to do, but whatever. I just thought it was funny. I mean, it's not my business. And, you know, I call myself a Gandelman sometimes, even That's though I right. don't align myself with his values.
Everybody wants to be a Gandelman. We have great holiday parties.
Yeah. But so she had a conversion. CBD. Free CBD. Yeah.
My brother.
So she, yes, Head and Heel. let's go ahead and plug it all the way. Head and Heel CBD, right?
My brother will be very happy.
Yeah. Yeah. He likes me better than you know. So anyway, Dorian had a conversion experience because she started going to church when she started reading the Bible for this oracle deck. And according to Dorian, she was sitting in church and she saw Jesus. She had an apparition, you know, a kind of a vision of Jesus. And Jesus said, I'm the real Jesus. I'm Jesus of Nazareth. And from that experience, she started to systematically, really, is what it's become, start to... you know, like reject all of the practices that she used to actually sell, even like, right. Yeah, yeah.
She's so probably sold millions and millions of tarot decks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you own a tarot deck, it's likely it's one of hers, but
I have about 10 decks like under this couch behind me right now.
Yeah. Because, I've seen them.
A lot of them are hers. Yeah. All the angel stuff, which is funny. That story strikes me as funny because my assumption would be with all that angel stuff, she was talking to angels all the time, right? And so, like, did she not talk to the real Archangel Michael or the real Gabriel? And then all of a sudden, you know, it just kind of seems strange. Like, it seems like there should be a through line to all of that, and it shouldn't have contradicted. Like, it should have all been together.
I think we're very dynamic. And in the way that I'm saying, inside of the system of Christianity, when I was 11, 12, 16 years old, I had real spirituality
right.
and I have it now. And I don't think there's any difference at the core of it. You know, energy is energy and energy matters. Energy is right. energy. It's just the lens that we're filtering it through. You know, just like right. a really dynamic, powerful kind of energy is neutral, but it can, if you put it through the lens of love, then it's excitement. Through the lens of fear, then it's anxiety. But underneath it, it's still just energy. And right. so I can't comment on it. I mean, I'm making light of the stories.
Like she rejected the past rather than incorporated it into her next step. So
I
kind of strange. Yeah.
No one can know the heart of a man. That's something that Jesus said. So,
well, our hearts are closed.
Ours are, but yeah.
Men. No, just kidding.
Men in general. Yeah.
No one can know the heart of a man, Trish.
I know. I'm not so bothered by one of the words being the gender neutral words.
So Doreen Virtue has this whatever shift. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about it because I heard somebody say, it might have been neuroscientists, I can't remember, but that your left brain can be a very rational scientist and your right brain could be a religious fundamentalist. And when I heard that, I thought about some people like in my own life that I know who can be very much like that, like super rational at one moment and then crazy dogmatic at another. And like, I'm sure everyone listening has had that experience with somebody like, whoa, how did that just switch? Maybe there are just different parts of us that operate differently and one just takes over, then the other takes over. And
yeah.
When you're telling that story, I was like, I wonder if that's what's going on a little bit there.
Well, when I think we get triggered into that irrational, you know, we set up from the ages of 0 to 8, we kind of set up the fundamental matrix of how the mind, even the brain, is set up. And by the time we're 35, it's kind of really set in. David, it's over for you. And Cody and I, it's been done a long time. And, you know, it takes awareness, you know, and it can shift, you know, neuroplasticity and all of that. We don't have to go into all of that. But if you are triggered into that irrational space of, you know, how you're behaving or thinking, you're really just some age where you got wounded between the age of 0 and 8. And it's an irrational wounded child. And it makes so much sense if you think about that. If you recognize yourself or someone else, you can't rationalize when we are triggered, as people use a lot, because when that pain body is activated, it is literally a 7, 8, 6-year-old child who's hurt right now. And all logic goes out the window because a 7 or 8-year-old or younger doesn't have that much logic yet. The mental body is not developed. So that's what I think is going on. So maybe that was it. She had all of these wonderful, when we have the thing that's so cool is we are reborn in any single present moment and we can be channeling higher wisdom. And in the next moment, thinking that someone is, you know, ugly or something, I don't know, something really nasty to think or say, right. You know what I mean? Watching the Kardashians. If there aren't two more juxtaposed experiences, channeling higher wisdom, watching the Kardashians.
Experience right there.
Well, in LA, that happens a lot, actually.
Yeah, channeling the Kardashians.
That's going to be the next show.
Cody, you're going to whip out your channeling skills.
I've seen Cody channel some Kardashian-esque energy.
Oh, yeah. Just on Fridays.
It's on Fridays.
On the weekend, yeah.
So she took her name off of those cards, right? Or do they no longer say her name on the tarot cards?
Oh, no. I don't know.
They sell them on Amazon. So. Well, yeah.
Which her public statement about that, her public statement about that is that she, like, if they're licensed and they're licensed in contracts that she no longer has control over in some cases. Oh. Like, she withdrew anything that she could withdraw, but she can't control some of that. So, you know, that tracks to me. I have no idea, though, you know.
Yeah. I want to look it up just to see. Take my name off the cards. Oh, no, they still.
Yeah, they're on Amazon.
They still have her name. Just
Yeah. You can get new decks you can buy them on Amazon. But again, she says there are foreign markets that she can't control that it was licensed to. So
was that her real name she change it for the...
This has become the Doreen Virtue
Doreen
show.
Doreen Virtue I know, expert.
I happen to know everything about her. It's weird.
Apparently.
Like, I do know that though.
Kardashians is Doreen Virtue.
She's the...
Yeah.
And I'm an expert. I'm like the Perez Hilton.
You're so LA.
That's actually at like her second or third husband's last name. And that's when she kind of became an author and everything. So she just kept it. And it's a pretty cool name. I'd keep it too.
Yeah.
So Trisha, tell us about angels then.
Okay.
So
Doreen
Virtue does, you know, she did a lot of that angel work. Uh-huh. And I think she's one of the people that made it extremely accessible and popular.
So.
Every freaking meditation school or yoga studio I've been in, like you see those cards everywhere. Yeah. And I've seen her when she was teaching, I remember in Hawaii, she had massive mm-hmm. crowds of people coming in, very wow. much, very beginner, like people just coming into spirituality going, I'm mm-hmm. interested and I want to learn more about communicating with angels. And so I think she did open the doorway for a lot of people in that regard. But when you work with angels or teach about it and say someone's like day one beginner, they come and they're like, Tricia, what, it, how do I, what, tell me about angels. Where do you start?
Start with the lower level angels and then you work up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You need a membership.
Yeah. You start with the silver level, work your way up to the gold, then the platinum.
And platinum. You got to get your friends to sign up.
Yeah. Like an MLM. Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the best way for me is to talk about it in the sense of it being like the universal architecture or kind of the unfolding of how this one energy became the illusion of countless individual energies. And so essentially I've done some classes. I did this class series called Archangels and Universal Laws, where I would have an archangel and connect with the archangel and channel information about a particular universal law. And so in that particular class, the Archangel Michael and the universal law, the law of one, I had partnered together. And as I connected the information that came from the energy we would call Archangel Michael, and that's how they always refer in these channeled messages, it's always the energy that is referred to by humans as Michael. Yes, you know what I mean? Like, it's a human construct. Names in general are human constructs. Animals don't use them. I don't know. Maybe other planets do, ones who are more focused on verbal language rather than telepathy. But pretty much everything that we know about is telepathic, so names wouldn't be important. So anyway, in the channeled information from Michael described what I guess you would call the universal architecture, that it was in the beginning, source energy sought to experience itself, and it was as if looking in the mirror. And by looking in the mirror, the illusion was created of two. And eventually the experiment went further so that source energy imbued the reflection to be able to look away from the mirror itself. And as it did, new experience were brought back to the experience of looking back into the mirror. And so on and so forth. Essentially, the energies continued to use that will of separateness, the illusion of separateness, to create, always knowing that you're home if you recognize that source energy's gaze is ever upon you, or that you can turn back and look into the mirror so that you know that you're home and that you have never truly left. And that's kind of the first reflections of the one energy would be what the words we use as angels or the archangels. And the names that we give them are just ways for us to benchmark the different aspects. And I think that they are both real, but they're not physical in the way that we are. They're real in the sense that the higher selves are real and the oversoul is real that creates the human form or the physical form. And so that's how I see it.
Angels have different jobs, right? Like, or different areas of expertise or energy.
It's our perspective. It's how we connect with them. So I think they're both illusory individuals, autonomous, but their will is actually seamlessly connected to the will of the one because they aren't as deep in the illusion as we are. It's very much to me, the reason that I did the Archangels and Universal Laws, it's like enumerating universal laws. So we have the law of one, the law of attraction, the law of gender, the law of cause and effect. But all of those things, as you look into any of those universal laws, the deeper you get, the answer is one energy. There is only energy. And so I think that's what it is. Yes, I think they are. They do create in our relationship with them a certain kind of job or frequencies that we understand because, you know, it's when two energies meet, then the resonance between them create a third energy. And then that would be the personality or the co-creation of that relationship. And there are common experiences of the energy that is called Michael or the energy that is called Ariel. When I was first kind of getting into metaphysics, and I'd had a kind of opening and started to just get really voracious and read. But I didn't know from angels, but I had an angel book and I was reading it. And the author said, in the first or second chapter, you can ask your guardian angel what their name is. And I had a meditation practice, so I kind of understood how to do that already. And so I just kind of put down the book, cleared my mind. And I said, what's the name of my guardian angel? And I heard the name Ariel. I should also say, along with having a meditation practice, I had opened up this ability and was practicing animal communication. And I've been a crazy animal lady my whole life. And so I was like, when I heard Ariel in my mind, and I was journaling it, I was like, that's weird. Like the Little Mermaid, that doesn't sound very angelic. You know, like I thought it was a stupid name. I actually judged it. And now it seems really funny to me because EL is a common ending for the names that we give angels that from that kind of Judeo-Christian mysticism. And so I was like, whatever, I wrote down Ariel, and then I Googled Angel Ariel, and the Little Mermaid came up first. And then the next things that came up were Archangel Ariel, which kind of floored me that actually tracked. And right. Actually in the book, I continued to read and she enumerated some of the archangels, including Ariel. And Ariel is known as the angel that oversees nature and animals. And they always seem to say in the little brief description, and animal communication. And so I shit my pants because it was really weird to me, even though I was having these evidential experiences already, that was still very shocking. And so, you know what I mean? Like I didn't know consciously anything about an Archangel Ariel, but I received that in meditation. So for me, there's evidences that these energies have a reality, beings of light, and have been very helpful. And if it helps, it helps is how I say it.
Mm. You use the word of God. Mm-hmm. Architecture of the mm-hmm. universe. Is that how you say that?
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, of course, that's way very human to say it that way. But if you just think about that story or that metaphor of source energy looking into the mirror and then the reflection looking away and then the reflection having a mirror of its own. And then, you know what I mean? Like it's kind of like a structure of things. Yeah. That's what I am using the word architecture in order to refer to.
Well, yeah. And the only reason that grabbed me is because I've often heard of those different angels as being archetypes.
So, I know, right? Right? Well, architecture, that's the structure.
Right. Like, oh, uh-huh. Similar. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Different way to look at it.
So Tricia, if somebody's listening and they're like, I want to talk to angels, how do you guide a beginner in opening up to that kind of energy?
Well, meditation, because when we meditate, we are connecting with we get out of that conscious mind, and the critical mind, which is the mind that is of all things that are already created, things that have been, or maybe the anxiety about what could be. But in the causal plane or the imaginal plane, the spiritual plane, that's the subconscious mind, your own personal subconscious mind, which is the seamless connection to the collective subconscious, or, you know, you might say the zero point or the A field or the field or the Akash, that's where it all is. And by raising your vibration too, which means to be doing your inner work and to be more aligned in your feeling and thought energy with love, and then you're going to be connecting. But the thing is, you'll be connecting with angelic energies or something of those higher vibrational light beings, if that's your intention. But truly, the process is intention, process, outcome. Like I said a moment ago, you can be reborn in any moment. So yes, generally speaking, raising your vibration will bring you into more consistent experiences that are spiritually evidential and all of that. However, in any moment, anyone can have a very pure intention and have a process, say a process like meditation, and then have the outcome of something that is an evolved or spiritual experience of some kind. So that's basically it. But definitely having access to the subconscious mind, aka the spiritual mind, is all that is the foundation. That's everything.
So you sit down, you start to meditate, you raise your energy vibration, maybe you ask a specific question, and then it starts, maybe it'll open for you.
Yeah. And it's about affirming it all. You come into it through your own energy, recognizing that your I am energy is the collective I am energy, is the one energy. So you kind of have to be in affirming all that is good, all that is right, all that is helpful. and not doubting it, you know, well, I connected, I thought I heard the name David. That doesn't, like I did for a moment. Ariel doesn't sound very cool, but I didn't completely reject it. I accepted it. I affirmed it. I'm kind of joking when I say I rejected it, but I kept moving forward. And if I had rejected it entirely, I would have even forgotten that I had this powerful experience. I would have forgotten that there was an Ariel that I connected with because I rejected it, judged myself. So we have to go in through the I am energy, which I think that's what that's what Jesus means in the Bible when he says, I am the way, the truth, the light. No one gets to the Father except through me. The way I hear that is ego eimi is the I am. It's the I am energy, your I am, my I am is the way, the truth, and the light. And no one gets to source energy except for through their own I am. That's how I hear it. So it's your I am. It's your, and the way that it can be in contact with that is to make contact with it. And I say daily. You can't quite, you know, there's all these people who are very sensitive and they're empathic and they're, oh, I'm sponging everybody else's energy. Well, how do you even know what your energy is if you don't spend time in it? Right. And it's like not having any walls on your house. And that's the inner communion that everyone, whether they don't have to be weirdos like us who are actually doing it somehow as a living, but you know, I just think it's a fundamental human experience, and that's what we're all moving more toward collectively anyway.
Right. And meditation is certainly one of the big doorways into that. Not the only one, but, and I would call that moving into a connection with your own beingness.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of way to talk about that is you have to go into that place where of being versus the thinking or the doing or the whatever.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Because the again, you know, the Bible says that the voice of God is a still small voice. Spirit is subtle and free will is absolute. So you can't actually have an experience unless you align with it, with your free will. And yeah, the free will is multidimensional. So there's parts of our free will that we are kind of holding in our unconscious mind, but that's what actually the inner communion practice, meditation, and doing all of that work to raise your overall vibration will help to integrate all those parts. And then your life becomes more in alignment with your highest good, because then you're in alignment with it.
Yeah. I think a big part of, or what just grabbed me in what you said about spirit is subtle. And we often describe, we look at the subtle body or the subtle energy. We use that word a lot in spirituality. And the thing that I think we all kind of know, but we don't step back and appreciate is just how loud the world is and what it takes to pull away or turn the attention away from that noise that's grabbing for our attention.
Yes.
And nowadays with the kind of the digital assault on our consciousness, it's even more so because someone is engineering something that'll hook your attention and keep it. And so this, which is funny to see this kind of pullback in the opposite direction, like meditation has just had this explosion. Mm-hmm. And it kind of coincides with social media. It's like everybody's, or with the internet, you know, it's like in the last 15 years, maybe, or even in the last 10 years, meditation has just exploded. I've been doing this for like 36 years now. And meditation was not something that you could reliably think of as a career path, even though I took it.
Yeah.
Back then. Whereas now, it's at all different levels. There is this idea of turning inward, finding that quiet place, and that's where the real value is. And I think that's a kind of a reaction to having our attention taken from us. So drastic.
It's like a counterbalance.
Yes.
And, you know, the organism is fighting for its survival. And so it's finding its own medicine, the collective organism. But I also think that there's something with the internet and the information age that has helped us to awaken to that, because we now, even though we use machines as the device that help us to do it, we now easily recognize that we can communicate and connect non-locally, I mean, like none of us are in the same room right now,
right.
But we have machines in between us that give us, that are facilitating that belief. But certainly, I mean, of course that started with radio and the radio waves. I mean, that being able to harness radio waves, they were always there to be able to use them. But if you go back 200 years to even suggest something like this, then you would have been burned like a witch because it would have made no sense. Right. You could throw your voice across the country, burn the witch. You know what I mean? Like, no, it's not possible. So I think it's reminding us it's just maybe the unconscious need for the truth of what we are, which is the, you know, energy that can connect non-locally, telepathically, telempathically, and that there is no separation between us. So it's kind of, I see it as a double-edged sword. It's reminding us, but it's also distracting us, right. You know, with static. Yeah. It's a staticky way to be able to have that connection.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like any kind of technology that we create is an extension of us in some way. And so we can't create something that we're not in some ways. Like the internet really is reflective of how we might commune and connect at a spirit level, which has been going on all along.
Isn't it interesting that that the general perspective would, like, that would blow their mind? Wait, what do you mean we can do that? But you see, we created this, so it's a property of us.
Because we couldn't have created it otherwise.
Right.
The inspiration came from somewhere deep inside.
Somebody,
The understanding,
That's why missiles are shaped like male phallic symbols, as are buildings.
Yeah.
Why would that be?
We create things in our own image.
Because David.
Because David
thought it up.
Look how big my missile is. Look at this. Yay.
It can destroy a nation. I don't know. I don't know, Gandalf.
I don't know.
I don't know about Gandalf.
But the obelisk is an ancient.
Yeah.
But isn't that more like reaching to God or something, or reaching to?
Yeah.
David sees the phallic nature. Yeah.
David, we'll turn the phallic talk over to you. So what is it? What do you think?
I was in Chicago and there was a building that the top of the building was actually shaped like a vagina. And someone told me a female architect designed it because all the other building looked so phallic and they were
By men.
So that was actually, so that's where I heard that. Yeah. I think all of the technology we have is a reflection of our inner being. And even when it comes to like cleaning up the environment, I think, like, I just read actually some kid in Ireland came up with a way to get microplastics out of the ocean. He's like, I don't know how old he is, 20 or younger. And so like that part of his being is like, I really want to heal this planet. Is able to think of something like that. And as we go forward, like the more environmentally conscious we become and connected to the planet, the more we'll probably invent things to save the planet. And on the other side of it, you know, the darker our consciousness gets and the more greedy it gets, the more we'll probably invent things that continue to destroy it. Like if an alien came to Earth, they would be like, wait, you guys dig holes in the ground, you pull up black liquid, you burn it, it covers the skies, and then you create a whole system and structure to protect the industries that do that. They'd be like, what? And at the same time, we create so many beautiful things, including, you know, things like podcasting and connecting, you know, technologies to connect with each other. So I agree with you guys. It's very much an expression of what's happening on the inside, all of this technology.
Is it me, Cody, or did David just bum us out a little bit?
Yeah.
It gets better, but it also gets worse.
It's worse.
Well, you're a good psychic, Trisha. You tell us, is it going to get better or worse?
All right. Well, so I have this mentee who's he's like 20 years old. And so we were looking, and this was probably when things were kind of really shifting politically in the United States to the bad. And he was saying, like, he was kind of stressing out about it. And I said, you know what, when there's a lot of negativity showing up, then there's also a lot of positivity that is balancing it out. And he's like, oh, wait, okay, so then if there's a lot of positivity, that's like kind of, then will the negativity kick up again? Like, you know, he thinks it's going to be equal, the way that David is saying. And I was like, here's the thing. The truth, the field itself is made of the positive energy, neutral if not, but positive energy. So a virus is something that gets eradicated because it's not genuine. It's not natural to the system. And that's what the negativity would be. But it doesn't have to balance out its own natural energy, which is what the positivity is. So in the end, love wins. That's a Carrie Underwood song. I'm getting back to Texas.
So tell us about aliens then.
Okay.
I don't get that segue. I don't know how we got to that.
I'm practicing.
Fantastic.
My segue. So when you do, we're just going off the metaphysical deep end here.
Right.
So when you do energy work, you know, intuitive work, does that topic come up sometimes? Do you channel other entities other than angels, maybe beings from other places? And have you learned things from them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, actually, that bit that I just told you about the, you know, the positivity that the field doesn't have to balance out its own energy, that it only needs to balance out the energy that is not, that is the virus of that would be something that came from interdimensional or ETs.
It
comes up. Yeah. So you're psychic, right? It comes up if my client is interested in it in some way or another, even if they're not quite aware of their interest in it, it does, it'll show up. Otherwise, I mean, like angels or archangels don't necessarily come up in every session too, because sometimes it's about connecting with past loved ones and that's where their heart is, or sometimes it's just about healing, you know, the mind and the energy. But anyway, yeah, we tend to call them like interdimensionals, but you know, the archangels are interdimensionals as well. Just meaning like beings that are not exactly as in the same kind of physicality that we are and are connected more, have more of the awareness, the benevolence of the law of one, are operating more with the service to others concept. And so they're able to connect with us telepathically, just the same way I can connect with animals who are alive, not just, you know, mediumistically, but incarnated beings telepathically, and they can act as guides to us. And so there are many different sort of star systems and areas that are commonly connecting with humans, especially since we've had all of these big awakening experiences, as Cody was saying, how the awareness about meditation, inner communion and all of that. And then, you know, 12, apparently we moved into a new age, 2012 and all of that kind of stuff. So we have all these new energies that we are both able to connect with because we are, you know, our eyes are open, our ears are open, our hearts are open to it. And then because of the benevolence, because there is no separation, they actually do want to help us to continue to ascend, as we say, or heal and move more toward our real nature so that, you know, the universe can be more lovely. Yeah. So the Pleiadians, you might want to know the Pleiadians, Arcturians, Andromedans. I have a connection to Pleiadians, a lot of Pleiadians. And in the Pleiades, there's also Lyra, and I have connection with Lyra. I don't necessarily always know where they're from, like who it is, because it's not necessarily important to me, but I can always tell by the frequency, the quality of the connection, that it is something that is more of of another world or another star kind of being. And I find it very, very helpful. They do tend to talk about technology and spiritual technology and just ways to use what we have already created and what we are creating and to evolve the whole part of it. Because I think because they are oriented to actual planets themselves, many of them.
So would you say that they are physical beings, or are they just energetic? Do they ever show you like, this is my planet? Hey, this is my family. So annoying over here, you know.
No, that's just you.
You're like, hey, on the Pleiadian galaxy, they have a little miniature David.
David. So, I mean,
how small does this have to be? Be miniature David?
He's not that small.
If we miniaturized David, it'd be hard to
interdimensional.
So, no, I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I guess I'm not that interested in that kind of stuff. But okay, so you asked, are they physical or energetic? And I would say that there's all the kinds. Yeah, I mean, I think that there are some who are maybe physical. I don't know how their physicality is directly relatable to how we're physical, or maybe if it's some are more transdimensional, so they're partially physical and partially energetic, you know what I mean? And some that are just energetic. The connection is telepathic, and really I think if I'm going to be connecting with those frequencies, the last thing I need to know is about their family traditions. That's not very important to me. So I don't know. It's more like down to brass tacks. It's usually, I would say that probably the cultures and things like that wouldn't translate. And so it doesn't really make sense for me to go in there. It's more about how I could be helped from my perspective.
Now, when you say interdimensional, mm-hmm. I mean, what that makes me think of is they're not in this dimension, right? So they're right. not actually in a planet in this universe, because that's all this dimension. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of in they're trans-dimensional, meaning they might span a number of dimensions.
Right, exactly. That's what I would say. Yeah. And like I say, the archangels are that as well, or the angels are that as well. Beings of light are interdimensional as well. So they're capable of connecting telepathically or however, energetically with any or all, non-locally. That's kind of the best way. Space matter is a property, is a result of energy. So matter is not, that's why we say metaphysical, because it's outside or above the physical.
Right.
So they're metaphysical beings is another way.
So they come to you in a session, you might channel them or talk to them or however your mm-hmm. interaction is. Do you ever find yourself go to them?
Oh yeah, I definitely. Well, what I do in my own practice and my own journeyings, I often will say, I'm usually just kind of generally connected. And I'm sure you guys feel this way too. Like, the communication from spirit or my guides, it often just feels like them. You know what I mean? It's just like them. And it doesn't really matter if there's an individual face. But every now and again, I kind of am like, I would like something to focus on. I would like, some kind of identity to help me, because I'm a human. And that's how I think I need help from my best friend, or I need help from my husband. And that's available to us. That's a valid experience still. And so I'll kind of be like, who can help me? Or I'm just journeying and I have the sense of an energy, and then I get curious and I can tell what kind of energy it is that's stepping forward to help me. If it's some sort of seemingly individuated expression of source energy or the law of one. Yeah. Was that the question? Did I answer it?
No, I think what I was asking is, like, you know, the experience of sitting in meditation or in a set, but let's say it's individual meditation and the entity shows up to you, like it's mm-hmm. crossed into our dimension and it's communicating. Do you ever find yourself in meditation drawn to go to them or to their dimension or to another wherever? And what's that experience like for you?
Well, I guess what the reason I answered it that way was because I think that it always starts with, it seems to me like I'm being approached, but truly it's that I put out an invitation, but I'm putting out an invitation that I don't even, you know, it's open-ended, so I don't know the answer yet. So then after I have a connection that where I go and seek, then I tend to be like, oh yeah, there's this one entity that I connect with is kind of like a mad scientist. And I have like a clear visual impression of what he looks like. Oh my gosh, he's a little David Gandelman. He's like really short and he's like bald. But I'm not saying this is real, like he physically looks that way. I'm just saying the energy I translate and I kind of benchmark it this way. And he's talking to me about systems, about spiritual technology and matrices and how to be able to use this in alignment with, you know, healing and helping others. And so I don't always totally get it because he's so scientific. So it's mostly like energy tuning, but I'll kind of like go to that experience and he kind of shows me matrices and sacred geometry and everything. And again, I can't map it. And that's not even the space that I'm in when you're in meditation anyway. So I just take it as attunement, and maybe it does come out in analytical ways later for me, you know, as ways to behave on the energy that I've received. I will sometimes have an interest or an urge to connect with my Lyran guide or a Pleiadian. And it's more, the energy is just, it's a feeling that I experience that is again, like an attunement. And I don't know, the messages come out somehow in some way. They're just like being in hypnosis and it's just suggested to my subconscious mind and it'll show up later. That's my answer.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
Very cool. Very cool.
And it is cool how in meditation, or maybe more in the referencing of psychic information, in the moment of the experience, you might not get all of it, or you might not be able to make sense of it or process it, but it shows up later.
Yes, right? Exactly.
And it kind of comes out later. And I think sometimes in meditation, or as we're teaching people to turn on or open up in their intuition, they can get frustrated if they can't articulate it or make sense of it right then. And a very big thing to kind of learn is to just sit with it and let it be what it is.
Right.
And then it will come out later in the more analytical form, or it'll dawn on you all of a sudden, you know, like 3 days later. And it's like, oh.
Yeah. And I think that there's value in not over intellectualizing something that is meant to be spiritual, and it will, it'll come out when it does. I mean, honestly, just think about how it happens even in things that are actual intellectually communicated education. You'll hear something like 99 times, and on the 100th time, you're like, oh, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the law of repetition. So it doesn't really matter what the words are. If you're trying to use, if you start to overly intellectualize it, then you're just going to lose your connection, because you've stepped out of that connected space of the spirit. Really, that left and right brain thing is a really good model for how we function.
Yeah. It's always funny to me as a spiritual teacher in teaching is, when someone does finally get it that 100th time, they'll turn around and they'll say, why didn't you tell me this before? It would have been so helpful. I kind of did about 100.
Yeah, we're really magical. You know what else along the lines there is when I do hypnosis, and, you know, people have a misconception of what hypnosis is. They think that you're going to walk around like a chicken, but it's meditation. Meditation and hypnosis are the same thing. It's just guided. And you aren't going unconscious. You're actually staying conscious, and you're even more conscious. You're waking up even more by going deeper into your subconscious mind. But what so commonly happens is that usually I bring people up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, eyes open, wide awake, and alert. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I do it as sometimes one time, three times, you know, depends. And it's so funny because they'll sit there like for 2 of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5s. And then finally, the third one, they'll be like, oh, that was interesting. I didn't think that I was under. But then when you said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I did exactly what you said. Like on the third time, they didn't even hear the first two.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I don't take it away from them. I'm like, yeah, great. That's good. You know?
So
yeah, we're pretty magical.
Mm-hmm. Tricia, tell us a bit about the classes that you're teaching and where people can find you.
Okay. Well, I'm actually right now I'm currently in the middle of a 6-week program on mediumship, and it's really awesome. The way that, this program that I'm teaching right now, it's in partnership with my best friend and collaborator, Crystal Ann Compton, who's a spiritual teacher and intuitive channel. And the way we run those, and the way I run most of my classes is, you know, it's a live presentation of the material, and we have a community, a private community for studying and connecting and, you know, supporting one another, and for practicing as well, if it's something like opening up mediumship. So it's hosted, like we have a group on Facebook, and then we have all the material also housed on a hard site. So that's really great. We're in the middle of that right now. That's not open, but it's awesome. It's so much fun to be just immersed in that, in the community, the fellowship, but also the information and the education. But I am actually about to launch my animal communication program again, which runs on that model as well. It's an immersive, comprehensive program, education, and also, you know, group coaching to actually practice and open up the ability. Because as you guys know, you can sit and listen to education all day long, but if you don't start to put action to the intention of actually, you know, doing something like practicing a spiritual ability, then you're just not going to see it.
Right.
So yeah, that's opening up soon again. And then next year in 2020, Crystal and I do a program called the Intuitive Intensive, which is a 12-week program, really immersive. Mm. Yeah.
Wow,
that's what I have going on right now. And I also am doing launching. I only take a few, but I do a coaching program. It's called a Season of Evolution. And it's 4 months with many one-on-one sessions, email support, and we do hypnosis, energy healing, intuitive, whatever we need to do, all kinds of emotional release, just to move people toward their goals. It's very, you know, it's steeped in metaphysics and mysticism, but it's not necessarily specifically about opening like a psychic ability. It's about your life.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And then you have the Charm Life podcast and the Enlightened AF podcast. So everyone can find you on iTunes or YouTube as well. And your website is trishacarcharm.com.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
So, so good to have you here.
Thank you.
Talk about angels and aliens and Dory Virtue and fundamentalist Christianity and
Pleiadian David Gandelman's.
My twin in another galaxy who happens to be miniature.
Mini me's. Yeah, mini David's.
I'd say your Zeta Reticula David Gandelman is just basically Patrick Stewart. How's that sit with you?
I love Patrick Stewart more than anybody because he plays Jean-Luc Picard on Star Trek. Yeah. But we'll do a whole episode on that, right, Cody?
We will.
Yeah, I do definitely. Like
that. All right. He's coming out with a new show, by the way, called Picard. So it's a whole new one. Anyway, Zeta Reticuli is... So there's this guy named Bob Lazar who we were talking about, me, you, and your husband, Brian, the other day, Trisha, who was on the Joe Rogan podcast and claims he was a scientist at a place called S4 next to Area 51, where he's working with alien spaceships in the 80s.
Yeah.
And he says that in the classified material that he read, that they believe the spaceship came from Zeta. How do you say it? Zeta Reticuli?
I think it's Zeta Reticula, and then if it's plural, it's Reticuli. I'm not positive though. Yeah, Zetas. How about we just say Zeta?
How many Reticuli have visited the Earth? And I just thought I remember us talking about that, and it was a fascinating conversation. If you haven't seen that Joe Rogan episode of him being on, it was pretty interesting. Yeah. I'm still kind of like, I need to research this more, but it's pretty.
What was his name?
Bob Lazar.
Bob Lazar.
Yeah, all of my geeky friends have been telling me, all boys only, have been telling me about this episode of Rogan with Lazar. And I'm like,
well, Joe Rogan, he definitely attracts a lot of guys. Actually, I saw him last night live at a comedy show. He was pretty funny.
Yeah, he was doing a comedy show?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you go up and meet him and say, hey, Joe Rogan, I do comedy too, and have him watch one of your videos? Did you do that?
You know, I should have, but I didn't. Although, remember last week when I was on, we were on that show, what was the name? Tony's show?
Yeah. It's called Truth Be Told. Yeah.
Oh, right. So me and Trisha were on the show called Truth Be Told with a guy named Tony Ortega, who is at like Scientology debunker journalist. That was a freaking trip. Talk about aliens and fundamentalism. Like, yeah. Cody, you should have been there.
I was
like, whoa, he scared me. I was scared during the episode. I was like, oh my, some bad people out there. Help.
Yeah.
I need some angel help.
Yeah. it's an interesting concept. Yeah, let's just say that, the Scientology thing.
Yeah, and I don't know about Cody's experience, but you have so much experience with growing up in the church and fundamental religious institutions. That's not something that I personally experienced that much growing up. I grew up. Yeah. Oh, you didn't either, Cody.
I grew up in metaphysics, and
that's awesome.
Reading.
I thought you were a Mormon.
No, that's family away.
So. Oh, in your family line.
My family line. But no, I grew up more reading Ruth Montgomery and Watkins. I mean, I was...
That's crazy. I love it.
That when I was, by the time I was 12, I probably knew all about that.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Wow.
Lucky.
Yeah, totally.
Did not have the other indoctrination.
So Trisha...
I've been around it a little, but never in it like that.
With Trisha, so you come from like the deep South, very traditional Christian culture.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, again, my family weren't, but the churches I went to were, yeah.
Yeah, and then you've made your way to L.A.
Deep South. She just came from Texas.
The deep, deep.
I know.
I'm Jersey. Like, everything south is the deep south.
I'm like, what, like Argentina? I mean, no, it's just Texas.
More like the west.
Great. Now I'm going to get hate letters.
Yeah.
You don't know what the deep south is. I'll admit that. I don't. I find the story so fascinating, so thank you for sharing it with
us. Sure. And
I'm sure there's some people listening who have similar backgrounds who are like, oh wow, yeah, I have a similar trajectory.
Yeah,
thanks for validating that for them. And all you alien listening angel people out there who are aware of energy, I hope this is fun for you. And Trisha, thanks for coming to sit with us and chat.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Cody. Perfect. This is really fun.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time. Take care.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.